Welcome to Season 4 of The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, where we discuss business agility through customer experience, employee experience, and digital transformation. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom. The Agile World podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to techsystems.com. To read more about the topics discussed on this show, you can go to my website at gregkilstrom.com and read my latest articles or get a copy of my latest book, Meaningful Measurement of the Customer Experience, now available on Amazon and other retailers. Hi, my name is Greg Kilstrom, and I'm the host of the Agile Brand Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about brand marketplaces and how brands can utilize them effectively. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Adrian Neustenbaum, co-CEO and co-founder of Miracle. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Hi, pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this topic with you. So why don't we start by you giving a little background on yourself and what led you to co-found Miracle?
So asking a French guy to start introducing himself in a timed podcast is a bit of a risk, but I was born in Paris. I've been an entrepreneur for like more than 20 years. This is my third company, and I've lived in the US for half of those 20 years. Miracle is a SaaS solution that allows retailers, brands, distributors to create their own online marketplace. So adding third-party sellers to their online assortment and scaling their business. So Miracle provides the whole infrastructure, back-end infrastructure, vendor onboarding, price inventory management, and all the way through quality control and enforcing the good experience for the end user. So it's kind of we're the leading SaaS marketplace solution.
Wonderful. Well, so let's get started here and talk about the rapid adoption of marketplaces in the retail space. So as you just said, you know, Miracle provides the technology for brands to more rapidly launch their own marketplaces. Can you talk about what's driving this need to launch marketplaces in the first place? And, you know, what's changed or evolved to make this so important?
I think the number one driver is that with the emergence of digital, there is, on the customer side, a willingness in a way to centralize more of one's purchase on one site, on the same website. So it's kind of obviously the extreme being Amazon, the everything store. But when you look at it from a category per category, if I'm shopping for sporting apparel, I don't want to go and have to buy in three different places, the basketball net, the cool basketball shoes, the shorts. And it's very hard for a distributor, a retailer to just have everything everyone needs. And so marketplaces have naturally emerged as a way to leverage third-party sellers to complement the assortment and basically offer all in one place in a highly curated way, because marketplace, sometimes people say, oh, that's like eBay in the early 2000s with like unknown sellers and mom and pops. No, today there's a lot of structure around marketplace, around the way they're organized, around how they can be curated. And so they really answer this natural need, which is selection. Obviously, there is elements of price in some markets, in some categories, where the competition that you may create amongst third-party sellers can help drive price to what the market expects price to be. And there is a notion of selection and service, availability of the product. If you maximize the sources of supply, you have greater chances of making sure that you can basically welcome someone in your store and say, yes, we have what you want at the right price and it can be delivered to you today.
Yeah. So from a branding and marketing standpoint, you know, what benefits do these marketplaces have from a brand perspective?
So, from a brand perspective, meaning the actual brand or retailer hosting the marketplace, it's about being relevant. And recently I was on a call with the CEO of a large retailer, and he was saying, for us, there is a sense of urgency to launch our marketplace because we need to regain, quote unquote, product authority. And by that, it's really being perceived like we were perceived in the physical world as the place to go, the go-to place for XYZ. And there is also very different marketplaces. Like if you think of the companies that that Miracle serves in the US, it ranges from, you know, companies like Bloomingdale's or Belk, or but also like people in the food industry like Kroger, or even brands like Madewell, J. Crew, and even more specialist stores like Oriental Trading. I'm not sure if you, great company if you're buying stuff or parties and stuff like that, all the way to Urban Outfitters and Weight Watchers and many more. So as you can see, all these brands, and I'm focusing on retail specifically here, or retail brands, consumer brands, they operate in very different categories, but they all see marketplace as a way to either expand outside of their core. Madewell is using their marketplace to invite minority-owned, black-owned businesses to be represented on the Madewell site. It is part of their 15% pledge. Companies, the CEO of Macy's was interviewed on TV, and he was saying, our marketplace is here to help us solve assortment gaps. And he was saying, during the COVID phase, everyone wanted to buy bread machine. We didn't have bread making machines at Macy's, but if we had a marketplace, we would have been able to offer such products. So it goes from like core to non-core. It's a very broad opportunity and value proposition.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds it's interesting because in a way it allows a brand to focus, and yet, you know, with the bread machine example you just gave, it also allows a brand to expand as needed. So, you know, it's kind of it sounds like it gives flexibility, right? And that I would assume that flexibility is based on, you know, whether it's external factors like supply chain stuff or maybe consumer preference or consumer demand. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, absolutely. The it's all about scale and flexibility, and it's all the way from customers are interested in this category. We don't have the expertise in house, but they expect us to have these products. How do we solve that? Customers want these products. Supply chains are disrupted. We don't have them in stock. How could we build easily flexibility in our supply chain? It's a lot of like very different examples of benefits. And fundamentally, one thing which is key is that if you think of how a marketplace is operated, it's much less intensive, both resources and capital, on the side of the brand or the retailer that operates the marketplace. You don't need to hold the inventory, source it, take the risk, hire tons of people to merchandise completely new categories. You really leverage what you've built already, whether it's your brand or your access to supply and the traffic you're getting to your site.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit now more from the consumer perspective, and, you know, talk about how shopping demands have changed and how branded marketplaces can adapt to this. So in your position, you must see a lot of data and information on changing trends related to online shopping and things like that. From your perspective, what has changed from a consumer's perspective that's causing brands to rethink how they offer an e-commerce experience?
I mean, there's many different areas, but one big change is probably how the Gen Z... I think there was a recent Bloomberg article where the Gen Z now commands $360 billion, I think, of disposable income. Oh. And the way they buy is really, it's very different from everything we've known and seen in the past. And so we feel that forward-thinking brands really need to pay attention to popular Gen Z platforms like TikTok, Instagram, etc. And there are so many kind of trends that are emerging at any moment on these platforms that a marketplace is a great way to once again build a larger supplier network, which allows you to make sure that you can carry at maximum of the stuff that this generation may be looking for. And I think also there is a lot of the importance of having more data around what's being sought from a demand perspective. Mm. It allows you to also optimize your warehouse inventory and avoid maintaining massive amount of inventory. And I think the marketplace gives you the ability to, it's what we were saying, it's the flexibility around that. And I think the last thing is probably that there used to be a bit of like fear in terms of buying from a third party.
Yeah.
But this is really going away. This is also a generation that's really first and foremost interested in can I get what I'm looking for when I want it? And so this has, we've seen like drastic drop in fears of buying from third party marketplaces to the point that now it's really become a very natural behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw, speaking of Gen Z, I saw a statistic recently that 56% of Gen Z are shopping on online marketplaces. So, you know, certainly this seems to be something that is more and more comfortable. And as that generation gets more income to spend on these marketplaces, that it seems like that will grow even more. Are you seeing, maybe not quite as much even, but are you seeing similar increases in adoption from other older generations?
I think when we look at our customer base and their customers, obviously you don't see the same customers across a Madewell, a Belk, right, and a Weight Watchers, and it's clearly a phenomenon that's spreading across all generations. I think one thing which is interesting to mention also, because you said they're buying from marketplaces, but they're also selling through marketplaces, and there is a growth also amongst this generation of the kind of circular economy. I buy, I resell, and I can't but not share I have a 14-year-old daughter who decided to launch an apparel brand this summer. She yeah. worked on it for a year almost, and she designed some clothes, she had them made, etc. And when the time came to sell, she didn't think of like going wholesale, and she basically opened a store as a marketplace seller on a bunch of miracle powered marketplaces like Verishop or Belk. She reached out to influencers on Instagram and messaged them and send them some samples. They posted on TikTok, and so everything is changing, like the marketing, the distribution. So this is having a really very strong impact on an industry like fashion, for even the way things are made, because it goes so fast that you need to be able to source more locally, because when you have success, you want to be able to produce more faster.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see how this evolution is impacting the whole value chain of an industry, for example, like the apparel industry.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I would imagine then, you know, in addition to building relationships with individuals as customers, to your point about, you know, your story about your daughter, these brands also have the opportunity to build relationships with potential suppliers who might also be customers, right? So do you think that builds a unique kind of relationship?
Yeah, and absolutely. There is a blurring of traditional boundaries in a way. To the point, like I'll give you an example. I'll mention three customers. So Kroger, Bed Bath & Beyond, and a great digital native e-commerce business called Dormify that sells everything for dorms and colleges. And so you have three different companies. I mean, here you have long established, well-established retailers. You have an emerging digital brand, and so the collaborations that are happening amongst those three are completely unique and only possible thanks to the marketplace economy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like an interesting way for a brand to still have a branded presence and yet be able to expand and contract as needed. I mean, I think that's a, you know, it's a brilliant way to kind of solve that, because I do think that not everybody wants to buy milk from the same place that they buy, you know, whatever designer handbags or stuff like that. Some people may, you know, and there's a store for them, but there is benefit to having some kind of targeted and focused and branded presence, I think, is important too.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. And the thing which is important to highlight is that often when I started Miracle, people would say to me, oh, we don't want to be Amazon. We don't want to sell everything.
Right.
And I think that there's a big difference between selling everything and selling everything within a vertical where the customer expects you.
Yeah, agreed. Well, one last question before we wrap up here. For those brands that maybe haven't gotten started with setting up a marketplace yet, what's a piece of advice you would have for them to, you know, as they're considering getting started in this realm?
I mean, I think we have the 10 commandments, but I'll stick to kind of three. I think the first one is it has to be top level driven, top level endorsed initiative. Otherwise, there is too much risk of crumbling under fake fears, you know, cannibalization. How is this going to impact the customer experience? I mean, these are good questions, but the success, the many, many marketplace successes out there are proofs that they can be addressed. And so if you don't have a top level endorsed initiative, there's a risk that it kind of like, you know, gets lost in the weeds. The second thing is probably the fact that, and we don't see that often now, but back in the days, brands or businesses would launch marketplaces and they would kind of have them sit on a separate tab, on a kind of separate domain, in a way that from a consumer perspective was like, okay, the real offering is here. Yeah. If you want the kind of like, you go there. So that's also a kind of a bad way to do it. And I think the last one is probably to avoid confusing curation with scarcity. And often we have these conversations where people, or every single one of our, you know, customers say we want to be curated. But curation doesn't mean having five products.
Right.
It's there's a lot to curation, like who do you onboard, what you ask partners when you onboard them, how the products are ingested and normalized, presented. There's more than just saying, oh, we're going to open a marketplace to only do polar ice making under 15-inch machines, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Well, Adrian, thanks so much for joining the show. For those listening, what's the best way for them to keep up with what you and Miracle are doing?
I'm going to be very old school, but I think miracle.com and our LinkedIn channel has a lot of great content. We host a lot of global events with a lot of our customers telling their stories. So that's probably the best way.
Wonderful. Well, again, I'd like to thank Adrian Nussenbaum, co-CEO and co-founder of Miracle, for joining the show. Thanks for listening to The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom. Talk with you next week. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.theagilebrand.show. To get a copy of my latest book, Meaningful Measurement of the Customer Experience, visit my website at gregkilstrom.com. Till next week, stay agile.